So there's things that we do directly, but a lot of what we do is really around finding ways to collaborations to occur, for partners to know and join with each other in the many things that are going on, and sometimes events as well. I mean, we're not primarily an event organization, but a couple of our events have really, you know, struck a chord.
Welcome to the Manufacture Houston podcast, where Houston's manufacturers come to share, learn, and grow. Brought to you by Alchemy Industrial. For more information, check out alchemyindustrial.com. Today's guest on Manufacture Houston is Harvin Moore, who is the president and CEO of Houston Exponential, or HX. HX is Houston's leading nonprofit innovation catalyst, and it brings together companies, organizations, and people to accelerate growth in Houston. I hope you enjoyed today's episode.
Harvin, good to see you.
Mush, it's great to be here.
I know. We really should be outside on a day like this somewhere, enjoying the weather, enjoying some beverages.
But I'm just going to come out and name it beer.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good.
Because, you know, life is kind of returning, and it's, the spring is here, and beer is cold. I mean, it's a great way to catch up.
It is. And what a better place to be than springtime in Houston.
It seems to be fun for everybody, whether you love Houston or you hate it, to talk about August. Like, can we just not always talk about August? Like, come on.
I agree. I mean, if you think about it, it's like, what, 2 or 3 months that, okay, are uncomfortable, let's say, maybe 4 months, but the rest of the time, it's great to be outside in Houston.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, it's true. It's damn hot in summer and humid. Okay, got that. But I'm telling you what, when you compare to, let's just talk about the other ecosystems, you know, the Chicago and New York and Boston, come on. And, you know, and San Francisco, these are places that are really cold, Denver, and for months and months of the year. So, you know, look, I mean, everybody's got different strengths and weaknesses, you know, whatever. It's not all about the weather. It's about other stuff.
There's right? some other stuff. We're going to talk about. We're going to talk about lots of other stuff, Harvin. But I agree with you. I think that we should quit. We should just ignore the warm weather areas and or times of the year, and we'll focus on the good times. So, speaking of good times, you've been in this city a while, haven't you?
I'm going to admit to you, but all my time. I mean, not all my time, but from the start.
From the start. So you're a longtime Houstonian, and tell us a bit about your background, Harvin, and how you got to Houston Exponential.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I was born in Houston, in Briarcroft, which is a little sliver of a neighborhood, kind of out near Briar Grove, I guess. And went to the public schools here, actually through like about 10th grade. Then I went to St. John's. Went off to college at Northwestern, and then after graduating there, I went to seek my fortune in New York, you know, like it seemed like everybody else was doing. So I lived in New York for about 5 years, was in the banking industry, and then after that, came back to Houston. While I was in New York, had lots of really great opportunities to study abroad and so forth, which was not nearly as common back then as now, to spend time in other places, including London. And so I did a lot of kind of travel. At the time, I was in business school, right? So it's a different, to some extent, a little bit different kind of travel than you'd have earlier in life or later in life. And so I think that was probably formative for me, too. I've been in one aspect or another of entrepreneurship and technology from the, I guess it's from the time I came back to Houston and I worked at a merchant bank at first, which is, you know, kind of an investment bank. It's not a term you hear much anymore, but it's sort of an investment banking company that does have its own portfolio, right? And so anyway, we had a group of companies, we were doing roll-ups in different industries. And so anyway, I learned a lot of things then. And then over the years, I was involved in a couple of startups. One was an e-commerce company. Another one was a growing aerospace company in the sort of nascent field of what was called then new space, which just meant not the big aerospace companies and not the normal government contracting world. And now, I'll say we're a little before our time, I guess, with that group. But now that's like so much is going on in that area, which is wonderful for those of us who just get excited about space, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is Space City. So, I mean, I think it's fun to see the reemergence of space, not just in Houston, but more broadly in Texas, obviously SpaceX, but there's a lot of stuff happening in Houston related to space now.
Yeah. And it's so true. And, you know, one of the fun things, Mosh, that maybe happened. No, it happened before the last time we hung out, but yeah. Is the fact that, you know, as you might remember last year, Houston's really young and mm-hmm. rapidly growing little ecosystem. And mm-hmm. we can talk about that later. Like, what's it look like and where are we and where are we going? But had its first unicorn, okay, ever. Now, unicorn, you know, $1 billion private valuation in the tech
right.
world.
Right.
And people are like, oh, no, you guys had Compaq, right? No, well, Compaq became a $1 billion company, but it was already public.
Yeah.
So this is the first unicorn ever. And so everyone thought, oh, it would be an energy unicorn or it would be healthcare. I mean, it was fintech, right?
And
it was
high rate, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, and to your point about, oh, and then on High Radius, man, I just heard they just raised another $300 million. That will amazing. Be the biggest, I think, raise in anyway.
That's amazing.
So aerospace, like what's cool is that by the end of last year, we had Houston's second unicorn. I mean, in one, never had one before. And in 1 year, it had two unicorns and like, it was it energy? No. Was it healthcare? No. It wasn't even fintech. Okay. It's aerospace now. Like right. people, Houston's really not the aerospace, big aerospace yeah. cluster, right? Mush. I mean, but it is there is a lot going on, but it's just like, just really, again, like everything else is just blooming. I think
it's just blooming. That's right. So you joined HX how long ago, Haben?
You know, two, I'm trying to do this in pandemic years, but
right.
I don't know. Not even two. Yeah. So it's 1 year and like 8 months, right?
You've done all these different things and now you're in this innovation thing called Houston Exponential. So what is Houston Exponential? I mean, I know what the words mean. So what's the day in the life of HX? What happens? What kind of difference are you guys trying to make?
Sure. Yeah. It just sounds exciting somehow, but
you know, like,
what is it?
Yeah.
First of all, it's an independent nonprofit organization. And then second of all, like, what does it do? Well, you know, four years ago when, you know, various leaders like all across the city that were somehow involved in technology, business, you know, research institutions, universities, mm-hmm. got together and was like, you know what, man, we have really fallen behind. This is after we lost the Amazon bid to BSI.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Remember? And like, we didn't just lose, like we didn't even make it to the consideration round.
That was a bit of a gut punch.
Dang. Yeah. Bit of a gut punch. People were like, wait a minute, how come nobody sees this amazing place that we all know and love? And it's not, mm-hmm. we're not really biased. It's actually an amazing city. And it is, but it had terrible startup numbers and venture capital numbers. And, right. Yeah. So these people got around, looked at best practices around the country and basically they came up with, a few things that they thought were best practices that would apply well to Houston. And, you know, one of them was the creation of a nonprofit that was a independent convening organization. So not an accelerator, you know, not a mentor network, not really so much something that deals directly to try to like fix things itself, but something that's really around collaborating, convening other people around a common mission. So developing the mission, you know, mm-hmm. kind of developing data, maybe platforms, attracting startup development organizations and accelerators. Developing the ones that were here and to get out of that business ourselves, because, you know, years before there had been the Houston Technology Center.
Sure.
And that, in fact, that technical entity, like that nonprofit entity actually became, it was renamed into Houston Exponential and also completely changed. I mean, really nothing, the part of the board remained, but, sure. So we're about, it's this convening, role that we have and we encourage. We're sort of Switzerland too, right? Like we're not competing with the startup development organizations, but what we did have a very big part in bringing, for example, Mass Challenge into mm-hmm. town a couple of years ago. In fact, John Nordby, who runs it, was from, you know, HX and Greentown Labs, and so Plug and Play, and you know, Generator, you know, Div Inc. We've been a part, different part, you know, sometimes a little earlier, sometimes a little later, but I think an important part of that attraction of the organizations, these hubs that help us develop density, because it's density and collisions of where innovation really takes root. That's when you get a flywheel and it really, you know, grows.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point, because it's hard to plan innovation. I think innovation seems to be very much a unplanned type of thing that can spring out of nowhere, but it can't happen in a vacuum. You've got, to your point, you've got to have density of talent and probably money and ideas and opportunity. Then out of that sort of group of ingredients, all of a sudden you get these opportunities and these companies that pop out. Is that a fair way to think about innovation and how it might work?
I totally agree. And I think the corollary much to that is that it takes time.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing if you have a great team, you get down, you just get it and work until it's done and create a project. But instead, if it's about creating the conditions, you know, trying to bring in parties.
Right.
And the whole point is that they are the ecosystem in their building. Well, I mean, that's just it's a different role, and it's a different time frame. And, you know, 'cause there's a lot of folks that I look up and correctly say, gosh, we're so far behind Austin. How come people still moving more to Austin than Houston? And it's like, hey, that's true. Yeah. But you're not going to overnight, you know, lure everybody. We are not at all even ready. Like I don't even think we have our messaging, you know, yet really. We don't think we've really turned to that yet and created a clear message about what's going on in Houston. That's true. And I think would be compelling.
Well, I think so. I think the idea of messaging is very important for sure, but it also has to be based on real stuff happening. So to your point, it takes a while for real stuff to happen, and then for those things to sort of bubble up to where they become memorable and they become mentionable and remarkable. You know, and you mentioned a couple unicorns, but I'm beginning to see lots and lots of examples of real stuff happening in the city. And I've been in the city since 1990, so I'm old like you, and so. It seems like the last 3, 4, 5 years have been incredibly dynamic. So how would you, if you got in your time machine, Harvin, and went back about 5 years ago, how would you compare back then to what you're seeing now in terms of this level of activity and density and sort of energy around innovation?
Sure. Yeah. I'll mention one data set that I kind of touched on a moment ago, and I think this one's on, I can't remember if it's on our homepage or not. We have the venture capital as one really good measure, you know.
Yeah.
It's measurable, first of all. It's not a soft number. That's a hard number. And we usually know exactly who gets funded, right? Mm-hmm. We may not know their valuation always, but we usually know the amount because it's published. And
right.
Anyway, the leading indicator, and the thing that Houston Exponential focused on first, as I mentioned, was bringing in startup development organizations. So when you mentioned, would you look back 5 years ago, you look at that graph, and I don't remember the number exactly, but there might have been, eight or so startup development organizations at that time. You know,
and these are people like Greentown, Mass Challenge, et cetera. Is that a startup development organization?
Yeah, that's right. And you look, I mean, by the way, this is a term that's used in some places and not used in others. Sometimes they call them hubs. Sometimes they call them this and that. But the intent is to create a term that covers, you know, basically, this is a pre-pandemic sounding definition, but co-working space, value-added co-working spaces. Yeah. If it's just, you know, Regus Office Suites, that's not one. Yeah. But when it was WeWork, when they have WeWork Labs and they've got, mentoring networks and so forth, then that's where we start calling it that. So you look back at that time, TMCX was there, Houston Technology Center was there. And I mean, those might've been, and maybe I'm going back the wrong number of years, but something like that, 5, 6 years, you know. Yeah. Those were the only two of any size. And then there were others that have been around for a long time, you know, right. You know, there was AlloSpark and Red Labs, but they're very small, right. A little, you know, kind of accelerator programs or an incubator like Red House. Right. But then like today, that number is I know it's above 40.
Wow, incredible.
Because you're stationed, and again, the numbers may be about wrong, but Station Houston, you might say that Station Houston kind of marked the inflection point.
Yeah.
But that was that time frame, 2016, right?
Yeah.
Where they were really people looking around, starting with, let's look at best practices in other places, mm-hmm. and let's create something like that here. Mm-hmm. And so that was that happened. I mean, the Canon came after that, and they not long after that, right? There's this ecosystem. The Canon is one of the the old and venerable.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Institutions. So anyway, I think that's really important, because that is when we graph that, you just see this hockey stick that began about 5 years ago, and then with that, you see the number of startups in startup development organizations, because these are the places where they spawn, right? Mm-hmm. And then to your point about collisions and the ideas breaking off, that's where people can bounce their ideas off each other. And yes, you know what? Steal each other's employees. Yes, sure. Fail fast, because you're like, you know what? You know what? I thought I was pretty smart, but actually my idea, I think I'd rather go on to that person's team, because that's really...
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you realize they're like 4 years ahead of you, and probably not going to catch up.
And that networking is really important. And you know what? I mean, it's not the same on Zoom, and the pandemic's things have been, we've proven in some ways very resilient, I think, but I can't wait for people to really, it's starting to happen now, really seeing each other again. That's going to pay off in not only mental health much. Okay. But like innovation.
Yeah. I think you're right. Cause I think nothing beats standing in front of somebody and them showing you what they've built, even if it's software, but certainly with hardware. And I think that human connection is really important. So Harbin, we've gone from two or three or so, let's call it 5 years ago, to something that is 20 times that number in terms of these startup development organizations. And then you mentioned within those startup development organizations, you've got another multiplier of startups that are happening. That's you talk about an exponential shift in 5 or 6 years in the city. That's a remarkable amount of activity.
It is. And those, as I mentioned earlier, are leading indicators. I mean, you have to start the company before you get your product market fit, and before mm-hmm. you begin to raise your money and test the product, and then maybe you fail, or you combine, or you, and then you start to raise money. So it's really a couple of, for most companies, it's, your venture capital, where you start getting noticed on the map somewhere, that's a way further down the line. So it's super important. We focus on like the beginning parts. And then what we should see, right, is that with a 2 year lag or whatever the hell it is, you should start to see the VC numbers doing that same spike. And you know what? They are.
Yeah.
It's really gratifying. I mean, it's really happening here. This is mm-hmm. very clear what's happening. And, it's true. You can criticize it's not happening fast enough. We are way behind Austin. We don't do this or that right. And that's all true. And you can't just change it around, because like I said, it's an ecosystem, and it's like lots of people, and it's not, no one's in charge. We're not. But it's clearly what's happening is we are a early stage ecosystem going through its inflection point to rapid growth. And you can just predict, like I mentioned a little bit ago, Mush, HiRadius became a unicorn at the beginning of 2020. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because it raised, I think it was all put out there, but it's something like 150 million maybe that wasn't it. But anyway, it was an over $1 billion valuation. So it was the first unicorn.
Right.
And what I read was that they just finished raising some, I'm only quoting what I read. Okay. I don't have any inside information, but it was like $300 million. Now, God, Mush, like $300 million is almost half of all that was raised in Houston of all of last year. And that happens when you get to Series C or B. Yeah. Like, and so we've got more companies getting to B and C. So of course the numbers are now bigger. We now have, and that means more jobs, more everything. So you're going to see this continue. You're going to see more unicorns.
Yeah.
You're going to see more jobs and more deals, and they're going to get bigger.
Do you see the financial part of this ecosystem responding? I mean, we've talked about VCs, et cetera. My experience with Houston and being in business in Houston for a couple of decades now is that 5 years ago, it was probably hard to have a real conversation with investors about software products. And you know, plenty of investment appetite for assets and punching holes in the ground and making, you know, big things and shipping them all over the place. So how would you describe the venture community and its understanding of these sort of innovative companies? Do you see that growing also and that responding as these number of companies begin to get some success?
Yeah, that's such a good question, Mush. So here's what we do, and a little different, I guess, than all people. We divide that funding segment into two pieces because there's an important difference between them. So one is high net worth and one is venture capital.
Right.
This is about the source. We have this picture on our website, which is a pie. And we, of course, use the pie symbol. Yay. For that. And so it shows the different parties that are in the ecosystem, different types of organizations, and kind of, and the pie is laid out in a somewhat logical way where the certain parts or piece touches each other. And anyway, so we put high net worth as one of the slices. We put it kind of in a 1 o'clock position. And then in the 2 o'clock position, we put venture capital. All right. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference? Well, high net worth is, of course, early stage. This is friends and family at one edge of it. And then angel investors and sort of pre-seed at the other end. And then you enter venture capital, where more and more there's interest in seed. And, you know, even they'll say pre-seed, I know. And then more and more established venture capital. So there's a division because, like, in one section, the venture capital section, there's two reasons. One, it is institutional, full-time professionals, you know, that are making the decisions and they have their process and all that. Whereas the other, you know, it's a continuum, but I mean, it tends to be people that most of them are not full time in that. Right. But the real division is geographic, like where are they and what's the strategy? Okay. The VC, the venture capital is mostly outside Houston. That's
really
cool. Well, you know, I'm just saying the venture capital available.
Oh, right.
Is mostly outside Houston. Okay. Oh, right. Cool. So the strategy of how to get more venture capital in Houston, which tends to be, again, for the little bit later stage deals, but not always, is going to be around attracting venture capital professionals to our ecosystem and making it easier for them to find deals and make their connections and do their stuff.
Right.
Whereas the strategy around getting more high net worth and angel investment is not about finding other people around the country to get them more interested in Houston. It's about kind of what you said a moment ago. We have tons and tons and tons of people in Houston who have lots of wealth, lots of sophistication, but their background is in a different kind of financial analysis. You said punching holes in the ground, right? The difference in the kind of deal and how to analyze a deal between real estate or energy and startups is completely different metrics and portfolio strategy.
Yeah. And even software, I think software in particular,
Harvin,
business model is so different than a typical more asset-based business model. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. So let's push on this point of venture capital money from outside of the city coming into the city. And tell me how is that happening now? Is it more sort of happenstance or is it part of design?
Yeah, thanks. So it used to be, I wouldn't say entirely happenstance, but first of all, there used to be very little of it.
Yeah.
And then of course we have had venture capital that's here. I mean, like one example would be Mercury Fund, right? It's a respected venture capital firm still, I mean, relatively young, I guess, compared with, I don't know, Kleiner Perkins or something.
Right.
Yeah. But they were here. And so they do deals all over the country, but they're here. So it's not that we didn't have venture capital here, but it just, Houston wasn't much on the map. And a few years back, there was not a widespread appetite for finding deals outside of their normal sort of service area, wherever the funds were. And, and it's in an extreme, as you can imagine, in, let's say, Route 128, is it 528 or 128? Anyway, Boston?
Yeah, somewhere up there.
Okay, and in the Bay Area,
where
once you start doing a lot of deals, you kind of, as you're a venture capitalist, you know the other VCs. You know, when someone else, they call you, see them at lunch, you know, you're hanging out with them.
Right. Yeah.
You meet their founders, their boards are all interlocking. You can refer a new CFO back and forth. The talent can move all. And so you tend to, you know, you have a lot of deals in the company. So in the area. So there was not as much of an appetite for looking for deals outside. Now, strategy, is it happenstance or is it strategy? So to answer the last part of your question, Mush, I'd say that, yeah, I would just point to two parts of the strategy. One part of the strategy was that group that came together years back, four or five years ago, that created Houston Exponential mm-hmm. as a best practice, as a sort of a nonprofit to help convene things. They also found that a best practice was to create a fund of funds,
right?
Which in Houston was the formed as the Houston as HX Venture Fund, mm-hmm. which even though it has a similar nickname HX, you know, it's not affiliated with Houston
right. Exponential.
Okay, right. It's a fund of funds, and the way that worked is basically it's an economic multiplier model whereby the main funds that were invested in the fund of funds mm-hmm. were drawn from major Houston corporations mm-hmm. who have an interest in the innovation economy, right? Sure. One way or the other, I mean, or many ways. Mm-hmm. So like they might write say $5 million checks as an investment in the fund of funds but in order to get a return on their money. But what happened to that money? So let's say $50 million, basically 40, 50 was raised, right? And so right. what happens to that money? It goes into, like I said, it's a fund of funds. So that fund sends all the money out to other venture funds in other parts of the country who commit mm-hmm. to visiting Houston on a regular basis in order to look for deals. They're not required to ever make an investment in Houston, but they are required to show they really do want to look for deals. And what happens is as long as you have deals, okay, right. We didn't have deals before, but that's part of what Houston Exponential is about right. and all these other startup development organizations are about. As the system develops, more deals are available. And so by this wonderful mechanism, the money that was put to work, the $40 million that was put to work in Houston and which went to funds in other part of the country has resulted in deal flow because venture capitalists from big ones, by the way, like really, really good ones from all around the country, I mean, as close as Austin too, mm-hmm. are coming to Houston regularly through the HX Venture Fund and looking at deals and funding them. And so, I think one disclosed example is Lion Guard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, many of us were early investors in Lion Guard,
right?
But their last round was led by UpData, which was a fund that the HX Venture Fund put money into. Sure enough, they came back to Houston. Sure enough, they put multiples of what the HX Venture Fund put into UpData. Multiples of that came into their very first investment in Lion Guard. So the multiplier effect is working.
So then
Houston Exponential as an organization also has a lot of activities and success around being a source of contact for VCs around the country, usually the ones that are not part of the HX Venture Fund, so that they can get more exposure to the ecosystem and then some of the platforms that we put together to make that process easier and to make our ecosystem more transparent.
So we've got this flywheel now moving. Took a lot of effort to get the flywheel moving, and it's a multifaceted flywheel. And it sounds like Houston Exponential is pushing on that flywheel in several ways to make it stronger and faster. And then all that is pulling in lots of different things that also is contributing to the flywheel. So it's an amazing catalyst that Houston Exponential has turned into.
Yeah. And thanks for using that term, because there, like I said earlier, I didn't say it this way, but there's people that think that maybe Houston Exponential must be telling people what to do and we're not. It's a subtle and it can be mm-hmm. a challenging position, because as a convener, there's certain things that we do because there's not another logical entity to do them.
Right.
Like, for example, we can talk about later, but the HTX Techlist, which is a platform for databases, it actually helps startup development organizations mm-hmm. so that their companies can be more easily seen and found. And then some other things that we do. There's a jobs board that Houston Exponential was part of getting started. There's the ecosystem-wide calendar of events, mm-hmm. which again, like, you know, lots of organizations have calendars of events, mm-hmm. but it really makes sense to have one that covers all the different organizations, because as a founder, you know, if there's a VC 101 class mm-hmm. that, you know, that's offered at the Canon, but you're actually a member of of GMCX or, you know, some other capital factor or whatever, well, why wouldn't you want to go see that as long as you're allowed? You know, it depends on their membership stuff. But so there's things that we do directly, but a lot of what we do is really around finding ways to for collaborations to occur, for partners to know and join with each other in the many things that are going on. And sometimes events as well. I mean, mm-hmm. we're not primarily an event organization, but a couple of our events have really, you know, struck a chord.
Like, give me an example of an event that has happened recently that has been really great from your perspective.
Sure. Yeah. I'll give you two examples. And one of them is a lead up and an action item for everyone listening. But I guess the most recent one that we've had or that HX has been involved in was something called Venture Houston. Right. And the primary organizer for that was the HX Venture Fund. And the idea was around, you know, bringing into town the not only the VCs that were partners that had received, you know, investments from the HX Venture Fund, but other big VCs nationally, regionally, and locally, and then also bringing together founders mm-hmm. as well, so that there could be a venue for them talking together, and then a pitch competition, mm-hmm. which was huge. I can't remember anymore, but there were, I don't know, way over 200, maybe it was 300, but anyway, entries for mm-hmm. companies that were trying to get in the pitch competition. Then we outsourced to a group, a whole bunch of sophisticated, experienced, you know, angels and mentors and mm-hmm. so forth to help narrow down that list to, well, I don't remember the number, but, you know, 20 yeah. or something like that. And then it was broken into, then we had judges on the day of the event. And I can't remember how much is, but it's VentureHouston2021.com, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was really amazing. Huge number of attendees. I wish I knew the number. It was like over 2,000. Lots of founders got exposure to VCs. People got to hear the questions and understand the process. A lot of really good conversations, panels and so forth about what was going on here. So mm-hmm. it brought a lot of visibility to the ecosystem, and then led to investments, you know, in our growth stage companies. And then the other thing I would mention is an upcoming event, mm-hmm. which is Tech Rodeo.
Right.
Yeah. And Tech Rodeo is something we did for the first time last year. And what is Tech Rodeo? Tech Rodeo is like a festival. Okay. Think South by Southwest, except remember South by Southwest didn't start as a, whatever it was, $250 million.
Right. Yeah. Dollar, was it a music festival or something?
Yeah. It started out as a music festival, and its first year, cause we looked it up, its first yeah. year. Well, now I can't remember, but it's like, I don't know if it was 750
yeah.
people came to the 15 events or whatever it was sure. the first year.
Yeah.
And then it grew to what it is now. Well, our first year was last year, and it was, you know what? It was the last big event of certainly the ecosystem before the, you know, pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody got sick, but it was March, the first week of March. It was incredible. We had over 2,000 and something attendees. There were like 35 events, and they were put on, like I said, it's a festival. So they weren't put on by Houston Exponential. I mean, there were, I don't know, maybe two or three of them but they were put on by, you know, the I don't know, I can't remember anymore exactly, but, you know, Capital Factory and the other entities and there was lots of collaboration involvement, and people just streamed mm-hmm. I'm not saying from outside the city, but it was also a connective networking event for inside the city. And so anyway, we were clearly going to do that again this year, and we are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we were beginning to plan for it, nobody knows, is it going to be virtual or is it going to be hybrid? Yeah. And so, you know, we're trying to be, I don't know, conservative, but at the same time, we're trying to tell people, look, it's you guys' events, right? We're just helping put it together. We're naming a date after we talk to a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. We're sticking on the calendar. We're pledging to put up the same old calendar where everyone can see, they can glom onto their events, they can develop threads, mm-hmm. they can search events based on what you're talking about, they can see the speakers. So that's all coming together right now. And MUSH, so far, there are over 100 events. There are, I've forgotten how many threads. They're going to be physical, hybrid, and virtual events all over Houston. You just can't believe it. You go to our Houston Exponentials, I don't know, LinkedIn, and you'll just see each day we name another partner who's committed to have an event, you know, with the ION and the.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, keep watching, because you know, the full agenda isn't up yet, but it's just going to be huge, and it's going to be flexible. Like, there are people that are ready to go out now, right? Mm-hmm. There are people who know how to do their distancing, or they're vaccinated, or they've got, and people know how to do that. And the venues, the restaurants, they know how to have their policies.
They do. Yeah.
So people are having these things, and there'll be a lot of them that are hybrid, but we think it's going to be an opportunity for people to get out and get to know the organizations they're a part of, and some new ones, and even if they want to join from their computer, and really make a lot of connections. And I think it's going to be huge this year. And then May, I'll look it up before we get off, but it's like the 23rd week of May.
Yeah. It's coming up.
Yeah, it really is coming right up. It looks to me, I think it's the, well, let me not get it wrong. I think it's, no.
Well, they can look it up on the website at Houston Exponential's website.
Well, actually, yes, you can go to HoustonExponential.org at all times, but also you can go to HoustonTechRodeo.com.
Okay.
Or alternatively, if you like HTX as your flavor, you can say HTXTechRodeo.com. And awesome. It's May the 17th to the 23rd.
So we're just about 6 weeks away or so, and so plenty of time to get involved, and plenty of time to set up an event of your own too, and to participate in whatever that you want to participate in. So it's it feels like Houston's century to me, Harvin. Not to maybe overstate it, but I do like to overstate things sometimes. I think there's, you know, when I was reading a couple of days ago at the Greater Houston Partnerships website, they have a really cool timeline. And I shared this over LinkedIn that gives sort of big things that have happened since the founding of Houston. And so what's amazing to me is that less than 200 years ago, we were 6 acres on the bayou. Mm-hmm. And now we're everything that everybody sees here. And then the possibilities of what we could become going into the future are spectacular. So as we close up, if you, again, jump in your time machine, but now go into the future, however far in the future you want to go, what do you hope to see in that future in the next 5-10 years or so? What would, or maybe 15-20, what would an amazing Houston look like to you in terms of innovation and the kind of progressive business ideas that are developing here?
Sure. I'll tell you what, here's how I think I'll handle that. I'll tell you the kind of look it's going to be, rather than putting a particular number out there, because I feel like talking about the kind now, right now.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, one thing that happens a lot is people from anywhere tend to have this exceptionalism mm-hmm. Attitude, right? If you're mm-hmm. America's just the greatest thing in the world. And
right.
You're from Texas, and it annoys other people, right?
Sure, yeah.
You know,
Texas is true though. Yeah.
Well, Texas is pretty great.
Yeah.
But the thing about Houston, what you don't want to do though, is you don't want to say all that because you're proud, but you're really not very aware. Like you know, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen, but you know what? You haven't been anywhere else. So how, you right. know, you don't want to be rude, but the thing is that even if you have, like, there is we all know Houston's a fourth largest city. Great. You know, there's big industries and, mm-hmm. and a low cost of living. I mean, pretty much people know that. Mm-hmm. And it's true. The fact that we have a booming ecosystem, though, this is true of all over the place. This is a movement that's happening everywhere in the world. And that's not to take anything away from Houston, but that's just to say it's not the booming ecosystem really that's unique about Houston. Although when it booms, how much it booms, that kind of thing is a result, I think, of the work that all these folks have done over the last years. But when we think about what we can look forward to in Houston, why it will be especially, the future is especially brighter here than in other places, I would say it's because of Houston's inherently collaborative culture and its diversity. Mm-hmm. And it's almost unzoned, unplanned nature. And I know that last part can be controversial because you got your zoning people, and yeah. I think they should just give up because when you've lost,
right?
I'm just, you know,
it's like you're gonna have a chicken restaurant in your backyard. Just suck it up,
right? And right. Well, you know, it can be. And also though, when it's not it doesn't work anymore for a certain kind of thing. I mean, it goes away on its own. It doesn't have to be rezoned. But anyway, whoever it's best or worst, the fact is Houston is the largest unzoned city in the country. And if you think about the other aspects of Houston, that's part of an overall distinction Houston has about being organic and being not about maintaining things the way they were and cementing, you know, hierarchies and keeping people out and whatever, which really is actually an issue in many, many, many other cities. And then when you look at the diversity, there's lots of places that are diverse. Now, we're the most diverse large city in the United States.
Right.
But there's a lot of other diverse cities. Why is it optimistic about our diversity? I think because Houston is the biggest large city that both due to its youth of the, you know, I guess the ecosystem and also its collaborative culture has the most opportunity to turn the diversity into inclusion, because diversity doesn't matter if you don't have inclusion. So I think what we're going to, I mean, we all know because of some of the events of last year, like the George Floyd tragedy, that everyone is actually, like, you know, saying they're really going to do something. And I think there's a difference. And I think in Houston, we are going to actually see some really important changes early on now, so that as we grow into a place that is more inclusive and therefore more innovative, because the innovation comes from differing ideas. And I mean, we could actually talk for a whole podcast about just this one issue. I don't want to gloss over it, but I just think it's key. And I think that's something that is unique about Houston. And it's the kind of thing that when people hear outstanding people who have different ideas or different backgrounds, when they see that, they are attracted here. And when they come here, they make it even more true. So it's a flywheel. So I think it's real. Yeah. I mean, I love Space City. I love, well, you know, the other kinds of things we talk about, Houston or the Gateway Arch for St. Louis, but those are symbols. And this is actually, I think, the essence.
I think that's such a great observation, Harbin, because going back to this idea of less than 200 years from 6 acres on the bayou to what we have today, it has to be something in the air that helps us create and innovate. And like you said, to be inclusive of people from all over the place, regardless of where you're from or your background. I think that's a great brand. I wish we could figure out the word or the fewer than 6 words to encapsulate what you just said about Houston, because I think that's so true. I'm not from Houston, but I've told many people along the way, this is a place where nothing really stands in your way. You got to be competent. You got to be hardworking. You have to be honest. And it's not perfect. But for the most part, it's an extraordinarily upwardly mobile place to live and to build a business.
Yeah. And I also feel like more places than most, and this is, I don't think this is an idealistic statement, but I think more places than most, Houston, the old people stand aside. I don't think there's this resistance to change quite like there is in other cities. And, you know, again, it's a huge city and there's lots of examples of these stories in every way, but I feel like this is a good place for those changes to occur. And I guess the other thing I'd say about Houston is those changes tend to occur peacefully. Like I mean, anything can happen, you know, violence can happen super quickly. Right. But I mean, the fact that the George Floyd protests in Houston were distinctly nonviolent. I mean, obviously big city, various little things happened and whatever, but I mean, like they really were. And his funeral was here.
Right.
A different
kind of event. Yeah, that's right.
That says something about Houston. And that wasn't surprising, you know, to people in Houston. It was a relief because, man, you saw the kind of stuff that's going on the rest of the country. Like, but I mean, you know, we went out, like, you know, our company was told everybody, you know, you don't need to go on. If you want to go to the thing, don't the protest, just check on out and like go on over. Yeah. So the office was pretty much empty.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right that there's that distinction about Houston that I don't think it really exists anywhere, or exists anywhere that I've been, certainly around the world and around the country. So Harbin, what an exciting time for Houston and for Houston Exponential to be part of that catalyst. And I'm so grateful that you would take time to be on the podcast with me today. And I'm looking forward to the next time that we're together. Maybe we will be back at Kirby Ice House and enjoying a cold beer. That'd be a lot of fun.
There you go. Off camera and off mic. No telling what we're going to say.
Right. Probably a good idea. All right, Harbin. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Manufacture Houston podcast, brought to you by Alchemy Industrial. For more information, check out alchemyindustrial.com. If you'd like to be on the show or want to recommend someone to get on the show, just reach out to me on LinkedIn. MUSHKHAN, Mushkan. I look forward to hearing from you.